There is this thing. Do you realize
what is?
There is this thing. Do you realize
consciousness is affected?
There is this thing
on.
There is this thing going on. Do you realize
our consciousness is affected?
There is this thing going on.
What is called
the news brought to you live.
Hi, welcome back to Unfit to Print. This is CKUT on 90.3 FM, broadcasting not live, but still from Montreal. My name is Amy Lloyd. Today we broadcast from the Geojiage, the traditional territory of the Haudenosaunee and the Anishinaabe Nations. The time now is 5:01. So due to the COVID-19 pandemic, Maya has decided to take precautionary measures and go home in order to social distance there. However, she will be conducting an interview with Dr. Sue Sondrom, a family physician in Toronto. She'll be discussing coronavirus and what the best measures you can take to protect yourself and others from a medical perspective. So stay tuned for that later. Before our interview, we will have our weekly headline roundup and a few tunes, as always.
Think of something you've seen. Break it down. Here I am. never gonna get her. She's out of your sight. You're never gonna get her. She's out of your sight.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print. This is Maya recording from Toronto. I hope everyone is having a safe and pleasant quarantine. So you just listened to A Stone is a Stone by Helena DeLand, followed by Blur by Forever. Now it's time for a weekly headline roundup. So the Legault government has announced that the province of Quebec has been put in partial lockdown as of today, effective until April 13th. With this in mind, the government has released the official list of which establishments can stay open during this time as follows. Grocery stores, depths, pharmacies, garbage collection, hardware stores, public transit, media and communication services, taxis, SAQs and SQDCs, courthouses, banks, gas stations, funeral homes, hotels, dry cleaners, restaurant takeout, dentists and optometrists, vet services, animal shelters, medical and orthopedic supply stores, movers, airports, Red Cross, police and fire services, correctional officers, coroners, food distribution and inspection services, transport and storage services, postal services, construction services, and construction rental equipment.
So thanks to all the brave employees of these establishments, and make sure that if you're still going to go out, you should remain cautious when visiting any of these places.
According to APTN News, quote, the Federation of Sovereign Indigenous Nations, otherwise known as the FSIN, is calling for Saskatchewan Premier Scott Moe to close provincial borders to help stem the spread of the COVID-19 virus, unquote. As stated in the press release sent out Saturday from the FSIN chief Bobby Cameron, quote, some First Nations have already exercised their autonomy by closing their borders and are limiting traffic in and out of their communities. We are calling on the Saskatchewan government to do the same. The traffic on our highways coming in and out of provincial borders continues to put everyone in Saskatchewan at unnecessary risk, unquote.
So yesterday, McGill administration sent out the latest information for students in the Faculty of Arts regarding any changes made to the semester and semesters to come due to the coronavirus pandemic. So as we already know, there will be no in-person final exams. Instructors will be posting their final revised course syllabi by today. Students, as of today, can also contact their instructor or teaching assistant regarding the revised course outline. As we already knew, students may assign satisfactory and unsatisfactory course options to any course taken during the winter 2020 term. The deadline for the SUs will be May 22nd, and students may withdraw from courses until April 15th. Classes will end on April 14th, so the term will not be extended. McGill also advises that people not study abroad this summer nor take international summer internships. As well, they have also discussed that travel plans for study abroad for fall 2020 are not being approved at this time. However, winter 2021 has not been discussed. Keep an eye out on your McGill email for more updates to come.
Last week, police forces decided to take measures into their own hands when it comes to flattening the curve. Friday, March 20th, the Ontario Police Force warned people they would be receiving fines if they violate orders regarding business closures and limited gatherings. In Quebec City on Friday as well, a woman was arrested who was walking around outside after being mandated to stay indoors due to contracting the COVID-19 virus. According to the National Post, quote, the arrest was the first time Quebec City's public health director issued an order to the police under emergency powers granted after Premier François Legault declared a public health emergency on March 14th, unquote. The province's chief medical officer told the press on Saturday that he has no problem with ordering police to make arrests. Additionally, quote, starting now, it's clear that we will restrict people who aren't respecting the orders, especially if they've already been advised, contacted, and we have information that they are walking around. It's a question of respect. The rights of individuals stop when the impact of the community is very high, unquote. This decision places communities who have had a violent and targeted history in the past with police forces in an even more vulnerable position than before. That was our weekly headline roundup. Next, we're playing our audio essay and interview with Dr. Sue Sandrum, so stay tuned after these songs.
Show me how you can. sometimes to be seen or unseen as it please. Holy whining, we drive.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM. That was Show Me How by Men I Trust, followed by Two Paper Moons by Matt Habowski. So now it's time for our interview with Dr. Sundram, who Maya is entering remotely from Toronto. So they talked about coronavirus in Toronto, plus the rest of Canada, media misconceptions, and medical recommendations as to how to protect yourself and your loved ones during this time. So please enjoy. Before playing our interview with Dr. Sue Sundram, we want to provide an update on the COVID-19 pandemic, including measures provincial governments are taking to flatten the curve, as well as discussions of rent freezes.
It's time for everybody to follow the public health instructions. It's time also for the government to act in a decisive manner. We must put Quebec on pause until Easter for a possible restart on April 13. So at midnight tomorrow, every non-essential economic activities must stop. Those who can close now, please do it. We will publish a list of what will remain open, but I can confirm it will, of course, include groceries and pharmacies. So it's a time to unite more than ever.
On Monday, both Quebec and Ontario ordered a closing of all non-essential businesses by today at midnight. Surpassing 2,000 cases of the novel coronavirus, Canadian elected officials are taking drastic measures to prevent opportunity of transmission. The aim is to limit social gatherings and contact in hopes to flatten the curve of infection and transmission. Quebec Premier Legault said that the province is now, quote, on hold, unquote, for at least 3 weeks. If the government is successful in its attempt to flatten the curve, these closures will end on the 13th of April. However, the state is not for certain. According to the CBC, quote, he said the decision was made after public health officials determined that COVID-19 is now spreading through community transmission. Up to this point, the vast majority of confirmed cases in Quebec were linked to people who had traveled abroad. Unquote. It was reported on Monday that Quebec officially has 628 confirmed cases of the COVID-19 virus, thanks to wider and more accessible testing. In Ontario, Premier Doug Ford says the list of what is considered to be non-essential will be released today. Ford promises that residents will be able to buy food, medication, and, quote, the power will stay on, and telecommunication tools will continue to run, unquote, despite the closure of many industries. As of yesterday, the number of cases in Ontario is now over 500 people. Right now, this order of closure is set to last for 14 days. Yesterday, a travel company known as Transat announced it will lay off 70% of its workers, which totals to around 3,600 people. WestJet says that they would reduce the number of domestic flights due to the dropping demand. Despite these changes, airlines are continuing to charter flights to reach stranded Canadians. According to the CBC, quote, Air Canada announced Sunday it would soon be flying two flights out of Morocco to bring home 444 Canadians who have been stranded there since the country effectively closed its borders to deal with an outbreak of the coronavirus that causes COVID-19, unquote. Known as reparation flights, flyers are expected to pay what has been described as a responsible ticket price. However, PM Trudeau said that those who are stranded can apply for, quote, emergency government loan of up to $5,000 to help cover expenses they incur while abroad, unquote. This loan is a repayable loan, and it is still unsure how accessible it is to apply for the loan and receive compensation. Vancouver is facing possible fines and closures if the city does not take social distancing seriously. BC also announced a $5 billion relief plan, which, according to the CBC, will allow for, quote, one-time tax-free benefit of $1,000 for workers affected by outbreak. Postpone tax increases that were scheduled for April 1st. Postpone tax deadlines for businesses, unquote. Unfortunately, the action plan did not include a universal moratorium on rent payments. As stated by the Vancouver Tenants Union, quote, a $1,000 conditional one-time payment is not going to keep renters in their homes. They are at risk of eviction and they are panicking, unquote. Premier Horgan promises no person will lose their apartment during the pandemic. However, no plan for rent freezes has been solidified yet. In Alberta, the government is changing its coronavirus testing. Those with symptoms who fall into higher risk groups, this includes healthcare workers, people with respiratory illnesses, as well as those returning abroad. This past weekend, according to the CBC, quote, group of doctors took to the streets to protest while standing a safe distance apart to press for more assistance for those who work with the homeless, unquote. Healthcare workers were demanding more support for the homeless population in Calgary. Dr. Christine Gibson issued a statement at the protest saying, quote, we need a big organized system-level response, and we could use reinforcements at any minute, right now, yesterday. These folks are going to be the ones ending up in the ICU. They are going to be the ones having severe disease course. It is obvious to me that we are putting an entire public at risk with our lack of screening, our lack of safety, and precautionary equipment that is available to frontline workers, and our lack of a collective response in the shelter system." Unquote. On Sunday, Alberta confirmed that there were 259 cases in the province. Saskatchewan is planning to reopen some daycares in order to offer healthcare workers a space for their children while assisting with the outbreak. However, with the new rules and regulations, daycares only permit 8 children per room. In Manitoba, there are 20 confirmed cases. Doctors are focusing on testing those who have recently traveled abroad. In Toronto specifically, Mayor John Tory, who is in self-isolation himself, made an announcement yesterday discussing plans which will provide him with more power when conducting emergency decision-making, meaning he does not require council votes, and this was put into effect when Mayor Tory declared a state of emergency. The province of New Brunswick has put forth an information line where people can report those suspected of breaking the province's emergency order. The phone line set up Monday was created after 911 continued to receive calls about people not self-isolating. According to the CBC, quote, "The head of Canada's Civil Liberties Watchdog is discouraging the use of the, quote, snitch line, saying it could create fear and division during a pandemic," unquote. The phone line definitely creates this Big Brother-esque atmosphere. Like the city of Vancouver, PEI also will be implementing strict fines for those who do not follow the province's COVID-19 rules. Premier Dennis King issued a statement saying, quote, "The message is plain, stay home. These measures that are in place are not an option, they are required," unquote. Like many provinces, Nova Scotia and New Brunswick have also ordered for a self-isolation period and the closing of all non-essential businesses. Nunavut is the second territory to close its borders, which will be put into effect tonight at 11:50 p.m. Nunavut, as of right now, remains the only province without a confirmed case of COVID-19. Yukon reported its first COVID-19 case over the weekend. Now that we've covered the national updates, I wanted to address these business closures. I believe it is essential to flatten the curve and minimize the infection rate as much as possible. However, although a business may be deemed non-essential, it is essential to someone's livelihood. Governments must begin solidifying and discussing plans regarding rent freezes. Additionally, governments owe their provinces transparency during this panicking time. In BC, people are promised they will not lose their apartments. However, across the province, rent is still due on the 1st of April. Governments need to ensure landlords practice empathy and leniency. Those who live paycheck to paycheck cannot be expected to pay rent during a nationwide shutdown. Landlords must make exceptions. Additionally, we must understand that whenever the pandemic ends, there will be a large gap of time before people are able to return to what was considered normal and obtain some financial stability. We must not forget about rent eviction cases or eviction cases. Although evictions are suspended for now, those facing eviction may lose their housing while re-entering a distorted economy. Suspension of eviction cases is a band-aid solution. Now it's time for us to hear from Maya, who interviewed Dr. Sue Sandrum, a family physician in Toronto. Once again, she'll be discussing coronavirus and what the best measures you can take to protect yourself and others from a medical perspective.
Okay, so I'm here today with Dr. Sue Sundrum. I'm recording from Toronto, and we are just going to ask you a few questions. Thank you for coming on our show today.
You're most welcome, Maya. My pleasure.
Okay, so the first question I have for you is, how is the situation with the coronavirus in Toronto right now?
So in Ontario at this point, there are 377 cases with 3 deaths reported. Of these, Toronto Public Health has notified us that there are 161 cases in Toronto. 10 of these people are hospitalized, and of these, 5 are receiving care in the intensive care unit. To date, there have been 4 other people diagnosed with COVID-19 who have recovered from their illness. But as you know, these numbers are accurate at this time, but the situation is rapidly changing.
How are you practicing precautionary measures as a doctor who's practicing in Toronto?
I work as a family physician here in the city, and I work in an office setting with three colleagues and two staff members. Our office has been operating virtually for 1 week now. What this means is that we are conducting appointments either by phone or by a secure video conferencing method. This, of course, means that we can't physically examine patients, but it's quite surprising what can be resolved by phone or video. Again, as the situation is still rapidly evolving, we aren't exactly sure when or if we will actually ever be returning to what I'll put in quotes, regular practice, or certainly to do in-person appointments.
How is the federal government supporting healthcare workers during this time?
The answer to this question varies depending on where the healthcare providers are working. As mentioned, I work in an office setting. One way the government is supporting us is to try to fast-track physicians to have access to the Ontario Telemedicine Network, one of the secure video conferencing platforms available to us. This will allow more patients to have access to their physicians without putting either themselves or the physician at unnecessary risk by close contact. One way I think the government is falling short, though, is by not being able to provide frontline workers with PPEs, which stands for personal protective equipment, like masks, gloves, and gowns, due to a shortage of these items. So they're having to pick and choose how to distribute what they have. Makes it tricky for people, as I said, on the front line to work effectively. The situation is very different in a hospital setting, where there is talk of not enough ventilators being available for use in intensive care should they be needed. It's heartening, though, to see that efforts are being made to address these issues.
How does the situation in Canada compare to that of the situation in the U.S. regarding coronavirus as of right now?
Simplistically, there are currently about 1,100 cases in Canada to about 20,000 in the U.S. In terms of testing, it seems that Canada at present has done a better job with this. Current numbers showing 50,000 people being tested in Canada, approximately, versus about 76,000 people being tested in the U.S. Keep in mind, the U.S. has a population 10 times the size of Canada. It's a bit difficult to compare any other factors like numbers of hospitalizations, the ages of people being hospitalized, and metrics like that between the two countries, because the healthcare systems are very different.
Is the coronavirus developing as a disease at all, and if so, how?
This is a very difficult question, as we know very little about the virus to begin with. It's only been a few months since COVID-19 has been around, and research takes time to really understand how a virus transmits. To be able to tell if a virus is developing or changing, we need to know its basic parameters first.
So do you think that the basic parameters regarding the virus, as in like even mapping it, or understanding like its basic structure, will help people identify a vaccine or a potential cure?
Absolutely. Those are the first steps that are necessary to be able to identify any kind of treatment modalities. But even when that information has been obtained, it still takes a long time to be able to develop a vaccine.
What are some of the misconceptions presented by the media regarding COVID-19?
I'm not sure who's responsible for some of the misconceptions, whether it's social media or the media, but I have heard various things that are not based in fact. One misconception is that COVID-19 transmission is affected by climate. I've heard cold weather and snow can kill the virus, or alternatively, the virus can only be transmitted in hot, humid climes. The truth is that at this time, there is no evidence that climate has an effect on the virus. Maybe with time that might actually come to pass, but at this point, there's nothing that proves this. Another is that the flu or pneumonia shot will have some protective effect on the coronavirus. Unfortunately, this virus is so new that none of our current vaccines are at all effective against the coronavirus. There are also some just plain silly myths out there, like the coronavirus is spread by mosquitoes, false. You can prevent infection by taking a hot bath, false. Spraying alcohol or chlorine all over your body, which is also false. Covering your nostrils with polysporin was an interesting one that I'd heard. Rinsing your nostrils with saline water and even eating garlic. None of these are true.
What would your advice be in regards to effective precautionary measures then?
The most effective precautionary measures to take remain the things that have been encouraged from the start. Wash your hands with soap and water often. Avoid touching your face. Cough and sneeze into a tissue or your elbow. Disinfect surfaces regularly. And the one that many people find difficult, but is crucially important, social distancing and self-isolation.
As a medical professional who has worked in the field for a long time, how does the COVID-19 pandemic compare to other viruses such as SARS or H1N1 in the sense of your medical practice?
Comparing COVID-19 to SARS, COVID-19 is much more transmissible than SARS. Meaning, one person can give the COVID virus to two or three other people, whereas with SARS, it was more like one-to-one in a little bit. At this point, SARS seems to have a higher fatality rate, around 10%, whereas COVID-19 seems to be around 2%. But in some countries like Italy, it does rise to about 8 or 9%. So again, these numbers, you know, are kind of preliminary numbers. We'll have to wait and see what finally shakes out. Comparing COVID-19 to the H1N1 pandemic of 2009-2010, in the end, it turned out that it was really no worse than a seasonal flu by numbers. The thing that dampened fears there was the rapid development of a vaccine. So that's obviously what we're hoping for here as well.
As recommended by officials, many people around the world are practicing social distancing or self-isolation measures, which you emphasized before as being super crucial. So what exactly does social distancing entail and why is it so important?
Social distancing essentially means avoiding close contact with others. It is a crucial preventive measure, as I said before, as the virus is spread by contact with droplets. If you're not in close contact with another person, the chances of you coming into contact with an infected droplet coming from them is diminished. It's as simple as that. So social distancing essentially means avoiding crowded places and non-essential gatherings, stay at home as much as possible, use food delivery services, online shopping if possible. If not, shop and take public transit at off-peak hours. Work and conduct meetings virtually. Use technology to keep in touch with family and friends. Exercise at home or outside. You get the picture. Basically, it's, you know, trying to avoid crowds of people as much as you possibly can. To be a bit more definitive, a distance of 2 arm lengths away from another person is what we are recommending, which obviously means, you know, you need to avoid things like handshakes, common greetings, handshakes, kisses, hugs, that kind of a thing.
Considering the number of cases continues to increase, some may begin or have begun questioning the effectiveness of social distancing. What would your response be to those folks?
I would say please take this measure seriously. As we know, it is one of the key changes which will help dampen this pandemic. Social distancing helps to slow down spread by giving the virus fewer opportunities to jump from one person to another. By delaying some of the inevitable infection, it does give the healthcare system less of a chance of being overloaded, and it also allows more time for a vaccine to be developed.
Do you think it's important to be stocking up on everyday supplies at a time as such? Or we've seen on a lot of social media postings that a lot of people are hoarding goods such as toilet paper. Do you think these people are in the wrong?
Well, I don't foresee a shortage of essential items. My advice would be to buy what you need. This ensures availability to people who are at risk, like the elderly and those who have underlying medical problems. It also ensures that the supply chain remains intact, which is if people do end up hoarding items, what ends up happening, it disrupts that supply chain, which then could potentially cause problems.
What is the risk of a second wave of the virus, in your opinion?
Honestly, Maya, in my opinion, I would have to say we just don't know, because we don't know enough about the behavior of this virus yet. It's hard to know whether it will behave like SARS and just go away, or whether it will eventually become a seasonal illness like the flu. We don't even really know whether infection will provide protective immunity. In my opinion, it's really just way too early to tell.
There's been a lot of controversy regarding the coronavirus testing and who has access to the tests rather than others. So why do you think tests in Canada are so difficult to access, and how can Canadians remain calm despite this inaccessibility as of right now?
So right now in Ontario, tests are being rationed so that there will be enough for the highest priority patients, including healthcare workers. One major reason for rationing is a shortage of lab supplies, including both the nasal swabs and the chemicals needed to do the virus testing. Lack of trained staff at some point may become a problem. It isn't quite yet. To try and help with this, a bunch of things are being put into place. University and hospital research labs, I think, are going to be recruited to help with the testing. There are a few logistics around that, but they can be worked out. Health Canada has also issued an interim order to speed up the importation of viral detection kits, which should also help. Second part to your question, Canadians don't need to panic about the situation, as the truth of the matter is that treatment does not really depend on testing. It is nice to have the testing. It's nice to have the testing so that we have a better idea of how much is in the population. So first of all, there are, as we all know, there are no specific drugs or treatment at present to treat the disease. Most people have mild symptoms and need to stay home and treat themselves as they would if they had a cold or flu, as the treatment would be the same for a mild case of coronavirus. People who are sicker will be stabilized by treating symptoms, again, irrespective of whether the symptoms are caused by coronavirus or another virus.
Despite the rise of cases of coronavirus all over the world, many young people still carry the mindset that for them it will be just a mild flu. So you can see this happening right now in South Beach. A bunch of people are partying kind of without regard of social distancing. How is this type of thinking problematic, and in what ways will it worsen the pandemic?
The problem with this way of thinking is that many people with a mild flu will try to carry on their life as usual without employing the preventive measures we talked about earlier, like frequent hand washing, avoiding touching your face, and, as you say, self-isolating, social distancing. So while the healthy young folks will likely feel under the weather for a couple of weeks and then get better and carry on, they have, in the meantime, been out and about spreading the virus to people who aren't so young and healthy and are more susceptible to more serious illnesses.
What would your final advice be as we head into these upcoming and uncertain months?
Well, at the risk of repeating myself, my final word is that we need to take this pandemic very seriously as a population. The next few weeks will be crucial in terms of the so-called flattening of the curve. We all need to employ the preventive measures that we are hearing about so much in the media. Social distancing is probably the most effective measure we can each employ as individuals.
All right, thank you so much for joining us today.
You're most welcome. It was my pleasure.
That was Maya's interview with Dr. Sue Sondrum. Despite the grim state of the housing and the world in general, there are still ways to support and contribute to community efforts. If you are in a financial position to do so, contribute to the initiative Save Montreal Restaurants. According to their page, quote, they make a list of restaurants with gift cards so that your customers and fans can easily buy them. If you are a restaurateur and you are interested, enter your information below, unquote. From what I gather, this document will later be released where people can go and donate gift cards to keep local businesses afloat. I will link the form to Unfit's Twitter after the show in case any restaurateurs are listening. The restaurant La Caima, who is staying open for takeout, announced on March 18th that the owner, Atig, will be offering free soup every day from 12 p.m. to 3 p.m., so just bring your own container. Again, I will post this link to our Twitter after the show. Lastly, there is a petition circling around for Hydro-Québec demanding electricity be 100% free of charge for an indefinite period of time, including both businesses and individuals. Once more, we will link this petition to our Twitter after the show. Search for Unfit to Print. That concludes our interview. We hope you found it informative. Another big thank you to Dr. Sundaram for coming onto the show and chatting with us about coronavirus, especially during this time, which is especially busy for healthcare practitioners. Up next, we're going to be playing a few more tunes before we wrap up for the week.
On était fidèles en alternance, en amour isocèle. Elle fendait canaux entre nous deux. Quand l'on s'endort, ça nous rassemble. Ça nous rassemble. Ça nous rassemble. Lorsqu'elle trace des liens de mon dos à tes épaules, nos corps entre ses mains, elle grave nos peaux, donc elle nous prend des sillons secrets que j'aime emprunter. Elle nous rassemble, elle nous rassemble, elle nous rassemble, elle nous rassemble. Ça me sert de nous mentir, ça nous sert de tour à tour, ça me sert de nous mentir. Ça me sert de nous mentir, ça nous sert tour à tour, ça me sert de nous mentir. Lorsque je reviens, mes rêves azurs, quel contrôle, la tête entre les mains, prêt à céder toutes mes émeraudes. On se garde des vestiges du feu. De nous ensemble. De nous ensemble. De nous ensemble. De nous ensemble. Ça me sert de nous mentir. Ça nous sert tour à tour. Ça nous sert de nous mentir. Ça me sert.
Friday night, I wanna get shit-faced.
Welcome back to Unfit to Print on CKUT 90.3 FM. That was Amor Isosceles by Boy Blonde, followed with Woman Here, which is off of Ada Lee's new album that will release on the 27th of March, so go check that out. Again, we want to thank listeners for tuning into another episode of Unfit to Print. Remember, we are still airing episodes, so don't forget to tune in next week at 5 p.m. Playing us out, we have Project Pablo with Software.